This is the BBC.
This podcast is supported by advertising outside the UK.
Hello, I'm Sumi Somaskanda from the Global Story Podcast. Kamala Harris and Donald Trump offer two very different views on climate change. One of them will lead the world's greatest producer of fossil fuels and have the power to reshape global climate action. So what would a Harris or Trump presidency mean for the climate crisis? The Global Story brings you fresh takes and smart perspectives from BBC journalists around the world. Find us wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, I'm James Kamara-Sami. Thank you for downloading the BBC's World Tonight podcast for Tuesday, the 1st of October. Sir Keir Starmer has said, "We stand with Israel after Iran launched nearly 200 ballistic missiles at the country." Israel has vowed to retaliate for tonight's surprise attack. We'll ask what next and how close is the region to the all-out war many have feared. We'll get the latest from our correspondents on the ground, speak to an Israeli MP from Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's party, and find out how the attack is being viewed in Iran. And we ask a former US diplomat who was closely involved in de-escalating tensions with Iran about the role that diplomacy can play in the current situation. And we are devoting the whole programme to the escalating situation in the Middle East, where less than 24 hours after Israeli ground forces entered southern Lebanon, Israel has been preoccupied with another front, the home front tonight, after Iran's promised revenge for the killing of its ally, the leader of Hezbollah, came from the skies and with very little warning. That was the sound of sirens in Tel Aviv tonight, urging Israelis to rush to their shelters as Iranian missiles flew in their direction. And then a few minutes later, another sound, explosions in the sky as Israel's Iron Dome missile defense system sprang into action, intercepting a barrage of ballistic missiles coming from Iran aimed at targets across the country. 180 were fired in total, according to the IDF. Some of them did penetrate those defenses, which were boosted by Israel's ally, the United States. And from the White House, the US National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan gave this early assessment.
Today, Iran launched nearly 200 ballistic missiles towards targets in Israel. The United States military coordinated closely with the Israeli Defense Forces to help defend Israel against this attack. U.S. naval destroyers joined Israeli air defense units in firing interceptors to shoot down inbound missiles. President Biden and Vice President Harris monitored the attack and the response from the White House Situation Room, joined in person and remotely by their national security team. We are still working with the IDF and the authorities in Israel to assess the impact of the attack. But at this time, and I stress at this time, we do not know of any deaths in Israel. We are tracking the reported death of a Palestinian civilian in Jericho in the West Bank. We do not know of any damage to aircraft or strategic military assets in Israel. In short, based on what we know at this point, this attack appears to have been defeated and ineffective. This was first and foremost the result of the professionalism of the IDF, but in no small part because of the skilled work of the U.S. military and meticulous joint planning in anticipation of the attack.
According to the IDF's spokesman, Rear Admiral Daniel Hagari, it is an attack that will not go unanswered.
We're on high alert in defense and attack. We will protect the citizens of the State of Israel. This attack will have consequences. We have plans and we will operate at the place and time we decide. During the defense, we made many interceptions. There were few impacts in central and other places in the south of the country. At this moment, we're still assessing the situation.
Speaking at the start of a cabinet meeting, the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said that Iran had made a big mistake and would pay for it. Well, Professor Mohammad Mirandi is an Iranian academic who is close to the government in Tehran and to their thinking. And this is what he told the BBC this evening.
It was a very limited attack. The Iranians have a far greater capability. It was in response to the assassination of Ismail Haniyeh, the head of the political head of Hamas in Tehran, which was a violation of Iranian sovereignty. And it was a response to the murder of the Iranian general in Beirut, the injury of the Iranian ambassador because of the beeper. His beeper exploded. And in addition to that, of course, it was in response to the murder of Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah in Lebanon. And the Israelis, if they do strike back, the Iranians have promised an even more, a much more severe response.
So what next? Across the world, condemnation of Iran's attack has been mixed with warnings against further escalation. Sir Starmer made a televised statement in Downing Street just over an hour ago.
I utterly condemn this attempt by the Iranian regime to harm innocent Israelis, to escalate this incredibly dangerous situation and push the region ever closer to the brink. It cannot be tolerated. We stand with Israel and we recognise her right to self-defence in the face of this aggression. Iran must stop these attacks, together with its proxies like Hezbollah. Iran has menaced the Middle East for far too long. Chaos and destruction brought not just to Israel, but to the people they live amongst in Lebanon and beyond. Make no mistake, Britain stands full square against such violence. We support Israel's reasonable demand for the security of its people.
Well, later on in the programme, we'll be hearing from our correspondents, Nick Beek, who's in northern Israel, from Tom Bateman, who's at the US State Department. We'll also be hearing from our chief international correspondent, Lise Doucette, here in London. And we'll be speaking to an Israeli MP from the Prime Minister's party. We'll also ask a former top US diplomat about the role that diplomacy can play in the current situation. But let's hear now about the experience of someone who came under attack from Iranian missiles today. Talia Dahan is a journalism student who lives in Tel Aviv and joins us now live. Good evening, Talia.
Good evening, James. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Can you tell us what your experience of the attack was today? What happened?
Well, first of all, let me say, as an American expat who made Aliyah, I am very varied in my background. I'm very proud of the American response to this attack. I have to say, we were eating dinner at my boyfriend's mother's house. Suddenly, we all get, basically the government puts an emergency alarm on every single citizen's phone. And it sounds like very strong, you know, and everyone knows this is red. This is code red. Everyone runs down. Because Tel Aviv is a very old city, not every building has a mamad, which is basically a bomb shelter. So you have these old run-down bomb shelters with half of the block inside of them. Within really 3 minutes, women, children, elderly, everyone runs down, crams in like a bunch of sardines. Needless to say, it was quite a traumatizing experience. This has been happening for years now, but you know, since the 7th, it's become incredibly real. It's I have to say, it's go time, and it's become incredibly real also for most Israelis. So, for example, some take the view where, you know, we're gonna fight. You know, the American view, we're gonna destroy everyone who comes to destroy us, and there are many who. Like, for example, you know, we were packed so tight in this room. And you know what happens when you pack a bunch of people in a very small basement? They create an incredible amount of heat. And there was children, you know, they took one child from the bath. He was naked with his mother and a pregnant lady was next to him. And this soldier who was off duty, who was in Gaza, was triggered by the alarms and he passed out next to us. Also due to the heat.
It sounds like an incredibly traumatic experience, but one you're getting used to, though, you say.
Yeah. So basically what I'm trying to say is, you know, it's kind of like, look at the Sudanese. You know, if you really want to talk about genocides, you have people just really getting used to horrible situations. They just accept it as their life. And when it's not happening to them, then they go back to their normal. You know, the human race is a very adaptive species. We adapt.
And when you came back up afterwards, you got a sense of what had happened, the scale of the attack from Iran. What are your thoughts now, tonight?
Well, first of all, I'm proud. I'm proud that this is the first world country who's able to defend itself, because if we were, you know, if we would have chosen, for example, Hamas to be our government, we would be flat right now, kind of like Gaza. So it's about, you know, you have to choose. You cannot be a sheep. You have to choose your government. And as being one of the only democratic places in the Middle East, I am happy to say we have done a great job in creating anti-missile defenses. And I can see it in front of me. You know, if you look on the news, you'll see that only one hit, and we have no people who were killed. This is an incredible amount of missiles. We were able to defend ourselves. I wish I can say that for everyone in the world who is going through a crisis. I really do. Yes.
Sorry, Talia. Thanks very much. We've run out of time, but thank you so much for sharing your experience. Talia Dahan, a journalism student, speaking about her experience in Tel Aviv this evening.
Hello, I'm Sumi Somaskanda from the Global Story Podcast. Kamala Harris and Donald Trump offer two very different views on climate change. One of them will lead the world's greatest producer of fossil fuels and have the power to reshape global climate action. So what would a Harris or Trump presidency mean for the climate crisis? The Global Story brings you fresh takes and smart perspectives from BBC journalists around the world. Find us wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, a short while ago, I spoke to the BBC's Nick Beek. He is in northern Israel, not far from where Israel launched its ground incursion into southern Lebanon overnight. And he talked me through what he had witnessed this evening.
We're right in the north of Israel. We can see over towards what is the Lebanese border. And all through tonight, we've heard periodically these explosions, these booms. Every now and then, the night sky has been lit up by them. Now, that we assume is outgoing Israeli fire as they continue their operations and, of course, continue what is now an invasion into southern Lebanon. But what was different tonight and what was significant was this moment a few hours ago when we saw overhead lots and lots of missiles. This coincided with this Iranian attack from different areas on different parts of Israel. Some of them we saw were intercepted in the sky. Other missiles continued their path towards more central parts of Israel. And then there was the siren, which meant that there was a specific threat to this area. And people ran to the shelters, just as they did in lots and lots of parts of Israel tonight amid this really large attack by Iran.
This situation is moving incredibly quickly. 24 hours ago, we were still not sure whether or not Israeli ground troops had gone into southern Lebanon, not far from where you are. Now we are looking at the possibility of some major Israeli response to the Iranian attack. What is your assessment of where things stand tonight? What does it feel like in northern Israel?
I think there's a huge degree of uncertainty. We were speaking to one man a short time ago who said he didn't think he was going to sleep much because he'd just been watching the Israeli late-night TV bulletin and had seen the vow from the chief spokesman of the Israeli Defense Forces saying that this attack by Iran tonight, more than 180 missiles, had taken the danger in the Middle East to a new level and that Israel would respond. And the suggestion was it wouldn't be in days and weeks to come. It would be extremely soon. So I think that there is concern. Interestingly, you know, 24 hours ago, President Biden was talking about his awareness that the Israelis may well go into Lebanon, that they would cross the border, but was saying that a ceasefire was absolutely necessary and that the temperature really needed to be dialed down. I think tonight, as we stand here, we look out across this part of northern Israel towards Lebanon, there is deep concern, as there has been for many months now, that if there is escalation, where does it end? Israel vowing to respond very strongly, Iran saying it will defend its dignity and it will do likewise. So I think it's not just the military experts that the Iran-Tehran watchers and those very well versed in Israeli politics who are confused and uncertain about where all this goes. It's, of course, the people of this country too, and the people of Lebanon, because over the past 2 weeks we've seen more than 1,000 people killed, according to authorities there. Yes, some Hezbollah fighters, but also women and children. So a time of great uncertainty.
The BBC's Nick Beek in northern Israel. Boaz Bismuth is a member of the Israeli parliament, the Knesset, from Benjamin Netanyahu's Likud party. He was actually out of the country when this evening's attack happened, and he spoke to me a short while ago as he was about to board a flight home from Paris. So how does he think Israel will respond?
Well, I don't know how it will happen and when it will happen, but I can guarantee to you that this time, I mean, this is something that Israel cannot afford not to respond. I think that the Iranian regime went too far. And we have seen that when Israel is being attacked, Israel responds. We saw it on the 7th of October from Gaza. We saw it on the 8th of October, Hezbollah. They both paid a very, very high price, Hamas and Hezbollah, and it's not over yet. And I think Iran, that used their proxies against us, I mean, they used Hamas, they used Hezbollah, they used the militia Shia in Iraq, they used also the militia in Syria. I mean, the Houthis, of course, in Yemen. But this time they decided to confront us directly. And the same way Israel responded to Hamas, to Hezbollah, to the Houthi, I mean, the response will be very, very severe, I can guarantee.
Iran, of course, says that this is in response to the killings of senior Hezbollah and Hamas officials. Israel does not claim responsibility for that, but most of the world believes that Israel was responsible. You could, of course, argue that this showed again that Israel's defences have worked. Is there a need to escalate?
Show me a country. Show me a country that respects itself, respects its population. We'll get 180 missiles. And if we did not have our defensive system, try to imagine the number of casualties we would have had today in Israel. And again, by the way, also the missiles we get from the Houthis, from the Red Sea, the rockets we got from the south for years and years, Hezbollah the same. Enough is enough. What was before the 7th of October will not be after. And this is why Hamas, Hezbollah, for me, will disappear as leading entities in Lebanon and in Gaza, and Iran will pay every price for what they did today.
And can all of that be achieved without threatening regional security, without threatening thousands of civilian lives around the region?
On the contrary, you should look at it exactly in the opposite way. For peace afterwards, but first of all, for security and stability, what is exactly the will of people in the world? What is the will of people also in the region? What is also the will of Lebanese people, you see, of people in the Middle East, is that all those organizations who are here disturbing the tranquility we can have in the Middle East, they have to disappear. Yeah.
Can Israel then fulfill its objectives in a targeted way that does not lead to a wider war that brings in other countries, countries that are not directly involved?
Look, I'll be very honest. I mean, while you're interviewing me, I'm waiting for my flight, waiting boat back to Tel Aviv. I'm looking at all the passengers. I hear them. They came to see me. And these are Israelis who want to go back home. They want to be in Israel that they love. And they're ready to pay the price, which is a conflict that will take some time. But this time they expect us. They expect us, government, coalition. They expect us to bring back security to Israel. And I think also that Israel is not isolated. We have got friends in the world. And I'm sure that the British government, the French government, especially the American government and all the free world saw what happened today and understood who's the evil one. There is a regime that is bad for the region, that is evil for the world. And this is why Israel will always be very cautious. When it goes to war, it goes to war against terrorist organizations, against horrific regimes, never against population. Population are our friends, and this is how it will be.
So is this now a war against the Iranian regime?
I don't want to define war or not war. The only thing I say is today Israel was aggressed. By the way, I recall that Israel also was aggressed by Iran on the night between the 13th or 14th of April. Again, more than 300 missiles, drones, cruise missiles, ballistic missiles, and Iran is doing again. And I think that this time, I mean, Israel cannot accept such a thing. Israel should and will respond.
Boaz Bismuth, member of the Israeli parliament from Benjamin Netanyahu's Likud party. If you want to keep up with all the latest developments on this story, by the way, you can go to the BBC website. There is a live page which updates reaction two events in Israel from around the world. We're going to go to the country now where the response is perhaps most eagerly awaited, and because it is the United States. Speaking about an hour or so ago, President Biden said that Israel had the full backing of his country.
At my direction, the United States military actively supported the defense of Israel, and we're still assessing the impact. But based on what we know now, the attack appears to have been defeated and ineffective. And this is testament to Israeli military capability and U.S. military. It's also a testament to intensive planning between the United States and Israel to anticipate and defend against the brazen attack we expected. Make no mistake, the United States is fully, fully, fully supportive of Israel.
Well, our State Department correspondent Tom Bateman joins us now from Washington. Tom, Joe Biden there talking up America's role in the defense of Israel. But what is he saying, or what do we think he's saying to Israel about their threats to retaliate?
And that is the fundamental question, isn't it? Because what we've had from pretty much every US official that has spoken since this Iranian attack on Israel took place has been to praise the effectiveness, as they see it, as their joint defensive operation with the Israelis. But the key point is what happens next. And in the run-up to this, the Americans were issuing more severe threats than they had done when the Iranians last attacked Israel. Well, that was in April. Now, this time, in the run-up to this event, the White House made it clear that there would be, in its words, severe consequences for the Iranians if there was a direct military attack on Israel. Now, you might argue that was in part to try and avert or to reduce the scale of an attack, but that is what they have said. And so I think now President Biden finds himself in a position where he will feel he needs to follow through on that, particularly because there are and have been voices both in Israel and in Washington who have suggested that because there wasn't a forceful enough response to the Iranians last time around in April, that this has sort of precipitated a further attack. Basically, it hasn't deterred the Iranians. And Jake Sullivan, the White House National Security Advisor, was asked exactly this when he was at the podium in the White House a couple of hours ago. And he said, we have made clear there will be consequences, severe consequences, he said, for this attack. And we will work with Israel to make that the case. So that's what they're saying. And I think we now watch, you know, the coming hours, possibly days, to see if they follow through on that.
It was just, what, a day or so ago, President Biden was talking about the need for a ceasefire when it came to the incursion into southern Lebanon that people were asking about. Talk of ceasefire seems for the birds at the moment, doesn't it?
Well, it is. And this is really what the dynamic that we've seen really throughout the course of the last year, but particularly, I think, in the last few weeks, really, that what has happened here, you know, the one thing that President Biden had made it his objective from the outset after October the 7th was to avert the Gaza war engulfing the region. And the sort of nightmare scenario there, drawing in the US potentially in a direct confrontation with Iran. So that has always been the ultimate goal and objective of his strategy. Now, what we've seen, particularly in the last couple of weeks, I think has been an even greater preparedness of Benjamin Netanyahu to effectively defy the will of the White House here. And so where you had this reached its crescendo, really, at the point last week where the Americans had pulled together their key European and Gulf Arab allies to call for a joint ceasefire between Israel and Hezbollah. This involved, you know, the Americans saying to both Israel and Hezbollah, pull back from the brink, restrain yourselves, and we'll get some mediated dialogue underway to try and solve this crisis on the border. Now, Benjamin Netanyahu couldn't have given a clearer response to what he thought of that by authorizing the attack that killed Hassan Nasrallah while he was in New York from his hotel room here in the United States. And what that has then precipitated, and although the Americans have said they fully backed the killing of Hassan Nasrallah because of his role in the region, the Americans have had to fall in line with supporting that and all of the consequences of it. And that is why we're now into this very sharp cycle of escalation, where the White House is, you know, finding itself again having to help shield Israel, protect it both diplomatically and militarily, but still trying to avert that much wider conflagration. And we're clearly many steps closer to it now.
Tom, many thanks. Our State Department correspondent, Tom Bateman, there. Well, let's speak to someone who has served as a senior diplomat in the Biden administration and in previous ones as well. Ambassador Wendy Sherman. She was U.S. Deputy Secretary of State from April 2021 to July 2023. And she was the lead negotiator, notably in the talks that led to the Iran nuclear deal. Welcome to the programme, Ambassador Sherman.
Good to be with you. Thank you.
We heard there from our State Department correspondent the lay of the land. Where does diplomacy fit in at the moment?
Well, I think diplomacy is about talking to everyone in the region, talking to folks around the world, to make sure that as much as we can be together. We saw today in the defense of Israel, not only the United States, but Jordan assisted as well. So diplomacy is, yes, about getting, hopefully at some point, a ceasefire to protect not only the people of Israel, first and foremost, but civilians throughout the region. And that risk would be even much greater to civilians if there was a wider war. But it's also to make sure that when there has to be a response, that it is well coordinated, well understood around the world, and their support for the actions that are taken.
But at the moment, fronts seem to be opening up by the day in the Middle East. As the situation seems almost inexorably heading towards this wider regional war that everyone is so afraid of, how does America influence things? Because at the moment, certainly it doesn't seem to be able to bring its diplomatic weight to bear.
Well, I think the United States has used some of its diplomatic pressure and work at the United Nations last week, along with many other nations. It wasn't the U.S. alone, to at least urge Israel to think very carefully about the steps that it takes.
Is that making a difference, do you think?
Well, I think it has made some difference. Israel has said that it's going to take limited incursions into Lebanon. That's a very difficult thing because history is not on the side of a limited incursion into Lebanon. And some people would argue that in many ways there is already regional conflict that is occurring. The real issue here is a very wide Arab-Persian war, or an Israeli war against Iran, which draws the United States into it, which then puts all of our troops throughout the region, including in Iraq, at risk. And we are really off to the races in a very profound way. I think that is what the administration is trying to urge Israel to really consider. Israeli politics and the politics of the prime minister head in the other direction. We understand that. And we also understand that Iran is an existential threat to Israel. So that is why the United States is always in defense of Israel in these situations. At the same time, a full-on war is one in which there will be really profound unintentional consequences. There will be thousands and thousands and thousands of deaths. And none of us really knows what would happen or where that all would go. And that is what President Biden, Vice President Harris are urging Israelis to think very carefully and very precisely about what they do and how they're doing it.
Ambassador, thank you very much. Ambassador Wendy Sherman, former U.S. Deputy Assistant Secretary of State. And just a quick reminder, if you want to listen back to any of this program or to previous ones, you can go to BBC Sounds, where you can also download the podcast. The main headline so far on The World Tonight: Israel has said it will powerfully respond to Iran's missile strike tonight, as Keir Starmer warns that the Middle East is on the brink. In other news, the Tory leadership hopeful Robert Jenrick has stood by his claim that British special forces are killing rather than capturing terrorists because of human rights law. And the two US vice presidential candidates will debate each other in New York later tonight. Well, let's get a bit of an assessment of where we stand tonight. Our chief international correspondent, Lise Doucette, is with me. It feels like a pretty big moment, this. How would you assess it, Lise?
Not just very big, but very dangerous. And as much as I want to believe Wendy Sherman when she says that the Americans are urging Israel to think about the wider region, to think about the consequences, to talk about a ceasefire, we see no evidence of that, Jamie. This is possibly the most dangerous moment in what has been a very dangerous year. There doesn't seem to be any guardrails anymore. You listen to the rhetoric tonight of the Israeli prime minister saying Iran has paid a mistake and it's going to pay for it. Benny Gantz, who normally is at odds with Prime Minister Netanyahu, is saying it's either us or them and we're going to go and get them. And similar rhetoric coming out of Iran with Mohammad Pezeshkian, who was at the UN General Assembly just weeks ago and saying we're ready to lay down our arms if Israel lays down his arms. Tonight he's warning, don't engage with Iran. What you have seen is just a glimpse of our capabilities. I was in Israel in April when the last tit-for-tat happened. And after Iran fired more than 300, in fact, we heard from Grant Shapps today, was more than 400 missiles and drones. Most of them were intercepted. And the message from the Americans then was, take the win. Draw a line under this. Tonight, they're saying serious consequences for Iran's strike. And we will make sure it happens.
The context of this airstrike, though, is different, isn't it? The previous one was telegraphed days, weeks in advance even. This was sudden, maybe an hour or two's warning, and here we are in a very different situation.
And different too. We still don't have the full picture of actually what happened. But it does seem that Israel's much vaunted air defense system, while it did intercept many of them, some landed, including at military bases. And even though the United States was very quick to say it was ineffective, it didn't cause any damage, they keep saying there's no injuries. And in fact, a Palestinian did die in Jericho. So the impact, Iran is basically sending a message that the impact was different, that it sent a different message, it had a more powerful effect. And it's warning tonight that if Israel retaliates, that it will also retaliate. So we're in a much, much different cycle than we were and the most dangerous thing is this proverbial brink. Everyone is always saying we're on the brink, but there doesn't seem to be anyone right now which can pull Israel back from the brink. And Israel seems to have decided after these spectacular successes in Lebanon, spectacular military successes, that it's just going to go for it now, that the wind is in its sails and it's just going to keep going. No one's going to stop them. There's an American presidential election coming up. And I keep thinking about the October surprise. We're on October the 1st. People remember 1980, Reagan versus Carter. He was trying to resolve the Iran hostage crisis. And Carter was worried that Carter would pull it off. And the October surprise would be that it would play a role in the presidential election. And here we are, the night of the VP debate, an October surprise. Will it turn the election one way or the other?
On Jimmy Carter's 100th birthday,
exactly.
As well.
It's a great novel, except it's real life. And
Yes, Lise. Well, look, thanks very much. Do stay with us. We're just going to get a bit more now on the view from Iran, because we're joined by BBC Persian TV's Sivash Mehdi Ardalan, who has been keeping tabs on what's being said there. We heard, Sivash, from Lise, a robust response and a robust rhetorical response from the new president. What more can you tell us?
Well, this comes, keep in mind, against the background of days of clamoring by Iranian hardliners for a very forceful response. And they've been reserving a lot of their wrath, not just for Israel, but for the Iranian moderates, including the President Pezeshkian, who went to New York, if you remember, a few days ago with a message of diplomacy and reviving the nuclear deal and talks and so on, blaming him for the assassination of Hania in Tehran, the Hamas leader, and for what's happening also in Lebanon. So they've been really demanding that the government in Iran shows some kind of a response or, you know, restores the credibility of its deterrence. I was even monitoring some of the hardline websites and chat rooms, and some of them were even tacitly criticizing the Supreme Leader himself for having issued that fatwa against Iran developing nuclear weapons. And the tone and the language in Iran has shifted so much among the political elite in terms of, you know, what the red lines are, what the parameters of Iran's strategy and deterrence should be. And for example, the development of nuclear weapons has been this has represented this major shift. So this attack today comes against the background of that. And apparently it seems like the hardliners or people who believe with their views have managed to convince the Supreme Leader that this attack should take place. Some of them invoking the adage that if we don't fight the Israelis in Beirut and in Tel Aviv today, that tomorrow we'll have to fight them in Tehran.
And we're hearing from Israel cast iron guarantees that they are going to respond in kind. What do we know of Iran's capabilities? Can they push this further?
Well, they must have thought about this. They have said that they will have been hit back harder, and that what Pezeshkian, the Iranian president, said, that this was a very small portion of Iran's capability. So we really don't know what more they have in store. Probably the Israeli intelligence and the U.S. intelligence, they have a better idea. But among the Iranian public, I can tell you there's a lot of fear and a lot of worry and anxiety of what will come from the Israeli side in terms of retaliation. Will it be, you know, civilian areas? Will it be oil installations? Will it be military installations? And then what will Iran do in return? A big part of Iranian worry is that as much as Iran's capabilities might be good or, you know, or significant in terms of its missiles and proxy groups and whatever that, you know, that can wreak havoc on Israel, but they don't have a good air defense system. So basically, Iran's skies are defenseless against, you know, a major Israeli or U.S. military operations or missiles.
Siavash Adlan from BBC Persian TV, thanks for that insight. Liz Doucette still with us here. And Liz, we've got almost to the end of the program. 24 hours ago, we were talking about an Israeli ground incursion into southern Lebanon that's sort of been knocked off the radar to a certain extent. But what do we know about what is going on in Lebanon tonight?
These are such staggering times. The day began with the Israeli invasion of southern Lebanon after months of that the back and forth across the border between Hezbollah and Israeli forces. And it's ending with this rhetorical war of words, but also the very real real risk that Israel is going to retaliate. It said it's going to, and Iran says it will come back. Every day seems to bring out something that would have been unthinkable in other times. Every day, as I said earlier, red lines are being crossed. It is early days, in fact, just the first day today of their incursion, although we heard today from a military source that actually Israeli special forces have been in southern Lebanon since November, that they have carried out about 70 operations, that they have spent hundreds of days inside, and that they have been looking for tunnels. So there has been a secret war going on all this time. It's very difficult terrain politically, because this will be the real measure of what is the strength of Hezbollah now. This is their heartland. They've been preparing for war in that border area for decades, including the Radwan force, whose whole raison d'etre is to prepare for incursions into Israel. So with that, hence the warnings today that Israel could get bogged down with its heavy tanks on this difficult terrain, and Hezbollah may have some surprises for them.
I'm seeing just now Israel is calling on two buildings in southern Beirut, people living in them, to evacuate. So there too, the attacks continue.
Yes, Israel seems to think now is the time. We're going for it. We're tired of our country coming under rocket fire. We want our more than 60,000 residents to go home, and we're going to do everything possible to do it. And nobody's going to stop us.
Liz, as ever, thanks very much. Our chief international correspondent, Liz Doucette. There are Main headline tonight, Israel has vowed a powerful response to a wave of missile strikes by Iran tonight. Tehran says that it came in response to Israeli attacks on its allies, Hezbollah and Hamas. The UK and US have condemned the Iranian attack and reiterated Israel had the right to defend itself. That is The World Tonight. This is James Kamara-Sami. I'm back tomorrow at 10. But for now, from me and everyone on the programme, good night.
Hello, I'm Sumi Somaskanda from the Global Story Podcast. Kamala Harris and Donald Trump offer two very different views on climate change. One of them will lead the world's greatest producer of fossil fuels and have the power to reshape global climate action. So what would a Harris or Trump presidency mean for the climate crisis? The Global Story brings you fresh takes and smart perspectives from BBC journalists around the world. Find us wherever you get your podcasts.